For example, look at Revelation 20 and verse 2. It says he laid hold of the dragon, the serpent. Now, is this a literal dragon or serpent here? No, because it says the dragon, the serpent of old, who is the what? The devil or Satan. So right there in the passage, it tells me that the dragon or the serpent represents something. So therefore, I'm free as an interpreter not to assign a literal significance to dragon or serpent. Look at Revelation 17, 18. Chapter 17, the very end of the chapter. Chapter 17 is all about a harlot. Now, is this a literal harlot? Well, you get to the end of the chapter and it says, the woman, that's the harlot, whom you saw, is the great what? City which reigns over the kings of the earth. So the harlot represents the last day city, I believe the city of Babylon, because that's what the text says. So there's a clue there alerting me to the fact that the woman is a symbol. Going back to Revelation 20, there's a clue there alerting me to the fact that the devil or the dragon is a symbol. But when I read 1,000 six times, was that expression ever defined as something else? It never was. It's just a straightforward statement. So while Revelation is a symbolic book, not everything in the book is a symbol. And I'm just giving you reasons why I think the number here is very literal. Now, one of the verses people like to quote is Psalm 50, verse 10, which says, "For every beast of the field is mine, the cattle on 1,000 hills." And the amillennialist says, do you believe God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills? Yes, He does. Well, does He own the cattle on 1,001st hill? And they're trying to get us to acknowledge that 1,000 there is a symbol. Now, what are the three rules of Bible study? Context, context, context. Psalm 50 verse 10 is a totally different context. This is what you call Hebrew parallelism. The Jews, when they did their poetry, did not rhyme sounds the way our poetry rhymes sounds. They rhymed ideas. And typically what they did is they put two lines together, and the two lines are supposed to relate to each other. So sometimes you have antithetical parallelism, where the second line says something different than what's in the first line. This is just an example of what we call synonymous Hebrew parallelism, where the second line repeats the idea in the first line, but in different words. So if this is synonymous Hebrew parallelism, and everybody agrees that it is, then obviously here 1,000 is not meant to be taken literally. It's meant to be taken as a figure of speech, modifying what's in the first line, that God owns it all. So I don't have a problem acknowledging that 1,000 doesn't mean 1,000 everywhere in the Bible. But going back here to Revelation 20, is there synonymous Hebrew parallelism at all? No. There's no parallel structure at all. It just says 1,000. It says it six times, and it's very clear. Now, at dinner, at lunch, at different times when I've had a chance to talk to you, one of the things I've heard is that your children have been raised in premillennial churches, and then they go off to Bible college and get educated, and then they kind of come back thinking they know more than the pastor and the church that sent them there in the first place, and they no longer believe in premillennialism. Now, let me tell you what these professors are saying to your kids. They're saying the book of Revelation is just like the other apocalyptic books that flourished around the same period of time. The book of Enoch, the apocalypse of Baruch, the book of Jubilees, the Assumption of Moses, the Psalms of Solomon, the Testament of the 12 patriarchs, the Sibylline oracles. And these books are very symbolic, and Revelation was written around the same time, and Revelation is using the same kind of symbolic imagery. So everybody that is educated understands that 1,000 doesn't mean 1,000. The problem is, there are vast, and this is what these professors aren't telling these kids, there are vast differences between the non-canonical books that I just mentioned and the book of Revelation. Yes, there are some similarities, but nobody talks about the differences. The apocalyptic books are pseudonymous, meaning you notice Enoch did not write the book of Enoch, but some guy wanting to add authority to his work used Enoch's name. Is that what John does in the book of Revelation? No, it's actually John that wrote the book. The apocalyptic books are pessimistic about the present. Is the book of Revelation pessimistic about the present? No, because Jesus has already broken into history through His death, burial, and resurrection and ascension. The victory is won. It just hasn't happened yet. The apocalyptic books have no epistles attached to them. What do we find in Revelation 2 and 3? Seven epistles. I used to think the epistles were the wives of the apostles, but epistles are letters like Romans, Corinthians, Thessalonians, and when you look at Revelation 2 and 3, you'll see seven letters there, and that's who the book is addressed to. You don't have that in these apocalyptic, non-canonical books. The apocalyptic books that are non-canonical don't emphasize morality. What does the book of Revelation say over and over again? Repent, repent, repent. The apocalyptic books put the Messiah's coming totally in the future, and the book of Revelation does not do that. It talks about the first coming of Christ. John says, "Behold, I saw a lamb looking as if it had been slain from the foundation of the earth." So the first coming of Christ set the stage for the second coming. And it's primarily a book about the second coming, but the first coming is mentioned to some extent as well. The non-canonical apocalyptic books do not call themselves prophecy. Revelation 1:3 calls itself a prophecy. The non-canonical apocalyptic books are what we call vata sciena ex eventu, and that's a fancy word for saying after the fact. They trace history and then rewrite it and pretend it was prophecy. They trace history and said, well, actually Enoch wrote this in the form of prophecy. They're frauds, in other words. Is the book of Revelation that way? No, it's actually a record of things to come. Haven't happened yet. The non-canonical apocalyptic books primarily concern a future generation, but what you'll find in Revelation is it concerns John's generation because it's written to the seven churches, but also a future generation where Jesus gives hope and He will conquer evil in the end. So when your kids tell you that Revelation is just apocalyptic and it's designed to be symbolic, this is a very helpful chart that you can show that there's vast differences between the non-canonical books and the book of Revelation. You can't go into pagan material and develop a philosophy of interpretation and read that back into the Bible, is what I'm trying to get at. So why is the millennial kingdom so significant? It's very significant because God calls our attention to it. He marks it out for us through the repetition of the expression 1,000 years. The second reason why the millennial kingdom is a big deal is because it represents the time period when God's authority over planet Earth is vindicated. We covered this a tad in the first session. And this really goes back to Genesis 1, 26 through 28. It's the office of theocratic administrator, where God wanted to govern the world through the first Adam. The first Adam was to govern the world on God's behalf. That's why He told Adam and Eve to take dominion and to rule over the birds of the air and the fish of the sea and so forth. And what you have happening in Genesis 3 is Satan perverting it. Satan takes the form of a serpent. Now, he could have come into Eden as a fallen angel. He could have come in almost any way he wanted, but he came in as a serpent to get Adam and Eve to listen to the animal kingdom, and in the process rebel against God.